Kia ora, welcome to Emerson's Podcast, episode 388. Today is Wednesday, July 5th, 2023. Welcome to July. Not that it's any different than June was so far, but it's a new month, you know, that matters. Glad you could join me for our weekly catch-up. Can I call it that yet? Has it been enough weeks that I can call it our weekly catch-up? Why not? I'll call it that anyway. So there's a few things I want to go over today. First, I want to go back to the electricity topic from last time, just briefly. Don't worry, I'm not going to go on about it. However, there was something I didn't know about at the time, and I didn't really fully understand how this company works. But what they do is they sell basically blocks of power, and the metaphor they use is a shop. And in the commercials, they show people going into this little sort of like a soupette sort of thing or supermarket or whatever, shopping for power, which the ad has always annoyed me. But now I understand it better because people can buy these blocks of power at discounted rates. And they can buy them sometimes months in advance at a sometimes substantially discounted rate, other times not quite so much. But the idea basically is that you can just, you know, let it tick over and you get whatever the normal rate is, or you can pay less. And they make a big deal about it, about putting it into the power, into literally and figuratively into people's hands. They can figure out how they want to spend their money. It amounts to doing a bunch of micropayments rather than one big monthly payment, but it's actually kind of less painful that way, I think. But be that as it may, what struck me about this is it is very similar to what the electricity companies themselves do. They buy, they're called futures, but they're actually future contracts, and that from the generators. And what that is that they contract with the generating companies to buy power at a certain rate in the future. And they typically do that in wintertime because in the South Island, the hydro lake levels drop because there isn't as much rain. Most of the precipitation that there is falls in the form of snow in the Southern Alps and the Remarkables and so on. And it doesn't get into the hydro lakes until spring when it melts, normally. Of course, these days all bets are off. But that's how they do it. They buy the power in advance so that they have a fixed rate later in the year and they don't have to raise their customers' rates. But that's something that only power companies, and I suppose maybe investors, can do by these futures. But what this company, PowerShop, is doing for customers is essentially giving them the consumer version of futures or future contracts. And I think that's fascinating. I don't know how this is going to work for me. It may be too much trouble, too much hassle. I don't know. We'll see. But I have been enjoying using the app, of course I have, to monitor my power use in real time. What is different about this than the previous companies is that it allows me to see how much power I'm sending to them on a daily basis. And maybe I could do that through an app for the other companies because I never bothered to download it or set it up for whatever reason. So maybe I could have done that before and I just didn't know it. But it is really handy to be able to see in real time not just how much power I'm using, but also how much power I'm sending to them. Although I'll get that at the monthly bill, obviously. I'll get a summary. But this way I can see by day. And I've talked before about how weather can affect my output dramatically. And that's, I've been able to see that so far, even over the past week. On the sunny days, I was sending 6.5 kilowatt hours of power to them. But on Friday, which was a rainy day, it was about a third of that. And I think Saturday was about half of that. It's dramatically affected by weather. And this time of year with shorter days, it's particularly noticeable. But anyway, I just thought that was interesting. And maybe someday in the future, I will talk more about how this consumer version of futures contracts is working out for me. But that's actually one of the reasons why this episode is called Future-like. And I'll talk about the other at the end of the episode. Last time, the other thing I talked about was this new road that's supposed to open. And it didn't open at all last week. But we did get an email from the developer, I think it was like Wednesday or thereabouts, telling us that what had happened is that they followed up repeatedly with the government agency that handles property title transfers. It's called LINZ, Land Information New Zealand. And they finally responded saying that they needed two more pieces of information, one from, I think it was council, And the other was from a third party that had something to do with the road. They didn't elaborate, so I don't know. And we're thinking, well, why didn't they just tell them that rather than wait to be asked several times? But anyway, be that as it may. So that same day, which was no, it was Thursday of this past week, I believe, they sent the documents through, the last two bits of information that were required. Well, today we got confirmation that the ownership of the road has been transferred to Hamilton City Council. And this afternoon, supposedly, the developers, contractors are going to start removing the barricades and the safety fences and so on the site. And they hope it will be opened at the latest by Friday afternoon. That's only 2 days because today's Wednesday. So it's not much. But still, it's a very hopeful sign. It's probably the most hopeful sign we've had so far. And it looks like it could be open before the weekend or by the weekend. I don't know. We'll see. But yeah, fingers crossed, because this could finally be it after all of this waiting and all of this torturous journey to get there. It may be about to open. So by next week, I should be able to have driven on it and to tell you what it's like. Well, not what it's like. It's going to be like driving on a road, isn't it? But if it really makes as much of a difference as I think it will. But that's for next week. There was one other thing I was going to talk about last week, but I canned it because I was already running quite long. And that is that on July 1st, the New Zealand government banned a whole bunch more of single-use plastics. And I think it's an interesting thing by itself, and it's something that I thoroughly applaud and approve of. So I thought I would talk a bit about that. Now, this whole thing actually began in 2018 when the New Zealand government banned microbeads, which are those little teeny tiny little plastic beads they used to put in things like facial scrubs and stuff like that. But what would happen is they would get into the environment, and especially the marine environment, and that was clearly a problem. And and also they end up in people too, it turns out. So those were banned. Then in 2019, they banned single-use plastic shopping bags, the sort you find in supermarkets and, well, any shop, really. And to me, that was no big deal because by then I'd already switched to reusable bags whenever I went to the supermarket. And I think a little bit later, I also bought a set of mesh bags to use to put loose produce into the supermarket as well, rather than use the plastic ones that they had there. Well, in 2021, the government announced they were going to have a three-phase plan to phase out what they called problem plastics, which are a whole bunch of different kinds of plastic products that are difficult to recycle. Now, in New Zealand, we do have, well, in some urban areas anyway, we have a soft plastics packaging program for things like bread bags and chips come in and potato chips and frozen vegetables and all that sort of stuff. It's basically anything, any plastic thing you can crumple up in your hand. And you take it into certain locations where they have barrels that collect them, like the supermarket chain Countdown has them, and the general merchant, the warehouse, which is modeled on Walmart, they have them. I think that's it in Hamilton, as far as I can remember. But those bags are highly recyclable. That's a hard word for me to say. And they're made into things like timber posts for farming. There's a company here in New Zealand, which I've mentioned on my blog, called Future Post. And they take plastics, including milk jugs, but also these soft plastics, and recycle them into landscape timbers and plastic fences that last, fence posts rather, that last for 25 to 50 years easily, as opposed to the wood ones that farmers normally use. They were intended for agriculture, I didn't say. They last 2, 3, 4, 5 times longer than the wooden ones that farmers usually use. And they don't rot, obviously, and that's why. But they can be used just like timber ones. They can be drilled into and so on. So that's what happens to a lot of that stuff. But in this program began in 2021. And the first phase, which was in October of last year, 2022, banned some PVC food trays and containers, polystyrene takeaway food and drink packaging, all expanded polystyrene food and drink packaging, and all degradable, that's in quote marks, plastics. Things like bags that contain pro-degradant additives like OXO and photodegradable plastics. I'm actually reading this from my blog post in case you're wondering. Those products are, the main problem with a lot of those is they produce microplastics, which are not the same as, well, not precisely the same as microbeads. It's what happens when plastics start to break down, and they produce these microplastics, and that too gets in the marine environment in particular, and freshwater too, for that matter. And it's also been, these microplastics have been detected in people's bloodstreams as well. So it's a really big problem, and getting rid of these things will finally help reduce that larger problem. Now, among the other things that also were banned last year were single-use plastic-stemmed cotton buds, you know, like Q-tips, and also plastic drink stirrers, you know, like for coffee or tea or whatever. Although I think long before the ban, if I remember correctly, long before that ban went through, places like McDonald's had already dropped the little plastic ones and had switched to wooden ones. So I don't know. But I do remember at the time that a lot of takeaway shops were complaining loudly about having to suddenly find substitutes for their polystyrene food containers. And I think part of the problem was a language barrier, because a lot of the fish and chip shops, for instance, are owned by immigrants who often source their containers directly from China. And perhaps the information wasn't put out in the appropriate languages for those shops. I don't know. But they adapted. I mean, they all do, don't they? Well, what happened now, what happened on July 1st, is phase two. And it bans more of these single-use plastics. And included in that is a first-in-the-world ban on those little plastic bags that are used in the produce section of supermarkets. We're apparently the first country in the world that's done that, which I think is quite remarkable. But as I said, I haven't needed them for a long time because I bought reusable mesh bags. And on Friday night, which was the night before the change, I stopped in one of the supermarkets on my way home, and I found that they had already replaced all the plastic bags at that supermarket with paper bags. And Countdown, which is the other supermarket chain, I went to New World on Friday, and Countdown also sells reusable mesh bags at, it's like 50 cents each or something, which is less than I paid, to be fair, several years ago. And those were pre-measured to have a maximum weight of 10 grams. And the reason that's important is because when they take one of these bags loaded with, say, apples or whatever, to weigh it, to charge, they can deduct 10 grams from the weight. So you're not charged over and over again for the bag. I have no idea how much my bags weigh. I should check, actually, because if they're 10 grams, then I'm good. But anyway, otherwise I could use them for storage here in my house. So those were banned, but there were other things that went too. Plastic tableware, like what's used in food courts or fast food places and so on, which includes plates, bowls, trays, and cutlery. Plastic straws are banned, except for disabled people and those with specific health needs. But there's one other thing which is kind of hard to wrap your head around, and that is, we're beginning a transition toward home compostable stickers on produce, like apples or whatever. And it's going to take a while to get there, partly because, you know, the industry is set up for plastic. In the meantime, apparently, they're going to be using paper stickers until they can get to ones that will degrade in a home compost. And see, that's part of the problem with a lot of the formerly compostable stuff, was that they can only be composted in commercial facilities because home composting doesn't get hot enough. And I've actually experimented with that over the years. I've taken things that say they're compostable to see what happens. Like, for instance, my prescriptions come in these little pouches that say they're compostable. So compostable, whatever. So I put it into my compost bin, and it didn't degrade after a year, year and a half, or something like that. It started to break down a little bit, but it wasn't composted. Yeah, so it's not, realistically speaking, it's not home compostable. But anyway, these stickers are supposed to eventually be home compostable. But that's in phase three, which will ban all PVC and polystyrene food and drink packaging not already banned, because some of it already has been. And that's the point where those stickers will need to be sustainable. And it could very well be that the way they'll make them home compostable is to make them out of paper exclusively. I don't know. But we're in a transition phase, so that's not going to be enforced. And I think the straw one might take a little while to to be enforced as well. But McDonald's switched, McDonald's, Burger King, all the fast food things that I'm aware of, had switched to paper-based straws a year ago, maybe even longer. They stopped using plastic straws. And I remember back, this must have been 2018 or maybe 2019, at supermarkets, it was already getting hard to find plastic drinking straws. They had paper, and that was it. Yeah, so that was a big development that happened on July 1st. And the third and final phase is in 2025. So it's another 2 years before that. And it's not that big a deal, really. It'll be the little tidy up of the last bits and pieces. But by then, everybody will have adapted already anyway. So, yeah. So that's just kind of an interesting thing that was in the news lately. It's something that interests me anyway, because I've long tried to be more sustainable in my home. In my home and in the way I do things. And I haven't even blogged about some of that stuff yet, but I've got more to talk about in the future. Perhaps not here, though. And finally, the other reason why I called this episode Future-like, it was a sort of a revelation I had today, an epiphany, if you will. And it's got to do with the overwhelming amount of stuff that is still all over my house. It is obviously an ongoing issue for me. It's obviously something that bothers me very much. And I try not to let it. But anyway, the main reason this stuff is all still here is just because of my own brain wiring and so on. It's not because I'm sentimental about the stuff necessarily. There's a few things I'm sentimental about. And there's some stuff I've resisted getting rid of because I thought to myself, well, I can use that. Except that I don't have visitors, I don't have dinner parties, so I don't need a lot of the serving things anymore that Nigel and I needed, because we'd have family over quite frequently. Well, that doesn't happen much anymore, and certainly not to the extent it used to. So there's no reason I couldn't get rid of a lot of that stuff. And it suddenly dawned on me today that some of this stuff that I haven't gone through yet, haven't downsized or whatever you call it, is stuff that I have because it displays an extreme faith in the future. Not just that I'm going to be there, but also that my future is going to be better and that there is a potential need for that sort of stuff. Now, I don't think that that's necessarily a good reason to keep all of that stuff. In fact, I do plan on downsizing, getting rid of what I can or things that I clearly don't need and probably will never use again. However, the reason behind it isn't about overt sentiment or memories or anything like that. It's about faith in the future, as I said, both that I will be there and that I will have use for it in the future. But I'm still going to downsize and declutter. But that's it for today. That's it for this week, this first week of July. I'll talk to you soon. Kakete no. Bye. You can comment on this or any episode of the Ehrman's Podcast at ehrmanspodcast.com, where you can also leave a voice message. You can visit and comment on the Ehrman's Facebook page, or you can email me, with or without a voice message, at ehrmans@gmail.com. This podcast is a proud member of the Pride 48 Network and is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.